So welcome, everybody. I'm super excited to invite you here. This is one of our first health topics that we're actually doing on Zoom. Usually we do them on, I think we've done one before, usually we do them on instant teleseminars, so we don't get to see each other and really interact. So I'm excited to have a very special guest here speaking. And she's someone near and dear to my heart, but she's also, you know, she's just a brilliant. She's one of our certified nutritional endocrinology practitioners. She was an ERC coach, for those of you who are in ERC, for 6 years straight, like that. And she's, this year, she's taken a break from it to focus on her own health coaching business and, you know, family and all that other stuff. But the topic today, her name is Lynn DeBure Johnson, and she has a lot of experience in the health field. I mean, she was self-taught in order to help her family, like to just actually get her family out of crisis. And she ended up, you know, doing macrobiotic cooking classes and studying Ayurvedic medicine and everything. And then she ended up going to IIN because she felt like she wanted to make it official, discovered that she could have taught the curriculum at IIN. She didn't really learn anything, but she walked out with a very expensive multi-$1,000 piece of paper that said she was now a certified health coach. And then she joined our program, our NEPT program, and realized that this was the depth that she was looking for, that really getting that she understood how the body worked, how to read labs, how to really help people on a deep root cause level. And so she worked side by side with me for many years in helping us with coaching people in our programs and ERC and, you know, doing some of these topic stuff and a lot of behind the scenes stuff. So I just want, her topic today is so near and dear to my heart. It's on circadian rhythms. And it's all, I'm sure she's going to be touching on sympathetic and parasympathetic and a little bit about vagus nerve in there, because that's stuff that we all get out of balance with. And we, you know, our hormones get out of whack when we're not living in accord with the circadian rhythm, the rhythm of our body. And, you know, there's that 24-hour cycle. Women have a 28-day cycle or thereabouts as well. And when we're not living in accord with the natural cycles that our bodies are supposed to be hearing and feeling and experiencing, then that's when health problems happen. So without further ado, I am going to let you have the experience of Lynn DeBure Johnson. And I'm going to see if I can put you on spotlight so that they can see you right in the middle of the screen.
You know, there's one thing you can do if you want to do that, but it might be a little too complicated. Everybody has to make sure in their video settings that it says hide non-video participants, and then you shut your video off.
Okay, so I just made it spotlight. Does everybody see her in the spotlight? There's another way you can do it too, because if somebody has slides and you want to see them in the slides, I just learned this the other day. When you go to view, view shows non-hide, but oh, it doesn't show. Oh, because she's not sharing picture. Once she shares her screen, if she's going to do that, then you can go up to the where it says view and you can do split screen speaker view, and you'll see her on one half and you'll see her slides on the other, which I thought was really cool. I just learned that. I always love learning new things. So without further ado.
You can also pin the speaker. So, which is like the spotlight. So that's all you see. Yeah,
great. All kinds of cool stuff. So yeah. Lynn, take it away.
All right, let's see here. Get it right where, here. I forgot I was playing around with it. Now.
Oh, let me make sure that I have it set. Yeah, you can. Okay, good.
And slideshow. There we go. All right. There you go. So I took piano for 12 years and still play and taught my kids. And so, and was also a dancing queen. So music plays a big part of my life, but that's why I will often, you'll often hear me have titles that include music in it. So that's why I entitled this, The Syncopated Rhythm for the Symphony of Your Circadian System. And we often think about the circadian system as, you know, the sleep-wake cycle or something like that, but it actually affects every cell, tissue, organ, molecule, and hormone in your body. All right, come on, go ahead. Well, it should go. OK, Okay, Mercury's not in retrograde. Come on. Let's see here. See, and I was doing this before and it worked just fine.
It's not moving.
It's not moving. I'm going to stop sharing for a second and look at it. Oh, no, okay. Maybe it was the sharing. So,
escape. The cool part about it, if you look when she shares again, if you put it in split screen, is that all the other people, the videos go away and you just see the person that is presenting. There you go.
Okay, let's try it that way. All right, so I want to make this very clear. I am not a medical doctor, and nor do I want to be, but I love learning, as Dr. Rita Marie said. And I've been doing this work for over 10 years, and the majority of it is through the information I've learned with Dr. Rita Marie. So I'm just sharing my information. Take it as you are learning and feel into yourself to apply it to your life. It's just not, it's the sharing. All right, hold on a second.
Is this PowerPoint?
This is a PowerPoint. So I'm just going to share.
It's weird.
It is. I was just doing it and it worked just fine. So I'll just do it from this way. All right. So how I came to know more about this. I am a mother. I have 7 children, 6 grandchildren so far, and 1 husband. And I homeschooled them. And one of the things I knew needed to happen right away is my children, my family, we needed a rhythm of the day. I used a lot of Waldorf Rudolf Steiner materials. And he often talked about the rhythm of the day. And one of the things is that daily rhythm helps children to have this understanding of time. And in that process, I learned about it. Time is very abstract for young children, and sometimes we think of it as abstract as well. So daily rhythm, I was learning, it helps them to have this sense of predictability and security in what was happening next throughout the day. So, you know, like teeth brushing, you know, that could be a struggle, but if they know every day at about the same time they have to brush their teeth, then it's not so hard. So, we can do that for ourselves, like going to bed, having a pre-bedtime routine that's part of our rhythm of the day. And so one of the things is that we talk about routines. We'll have a morning routine and a nighttime routine, but rhythm and routine are different. Rhythm is a little more flexible. It's more like a flow, whereas a routine is more like scheduled things. Another aspect is of daily rhythm more than routine is the idea of ritual. So you'll often hear Dr. Rita Marie talking about taking that moment before you eat and giving a blessing over your meal, just taking that moment. That's a ritual. And so that's more of a rhythm thing. It's not just a routine. Come on. Apparently I'm having issues here. There we go. So what happens is, and I found this for myself, is that we try to fit in everything into one day as much as we can. We wake up and we barely breathe. And what can I get done? That's all it's about, is what can I get done? And what I found for myself is that one day I couldn't get out of bed. My alarm went off, I went to move, and I couldn't move. I couldn't lift my head up off the pillow. And my children came in, "Hey mom, you haven't made breakfast, you're still in bed." I'm like, I can't get up, I can't move. And it's because I was trying to do too much in a time that I wasn't supposed to be doing it. I wasn't realizing this cycle that I was in. And I was trying to, I was actually working two part-time jobs and homeschooling, trying to clean, garden, do everything. And that's not what I was supposed to do. And my body said, all right, you won't do it, we'll do it for you. And so there is an order to things. All of the seasons of our life are necessary for us to learn. We need to have a season as a small child. We need to have a season as a teenager, as a young adult, as an older person, as possibly a mother. You know, there are all sorts of seasons that we are given to do. And if we try to do a season before its time, it throws us off. In Ecclesiastes 3, verses 1 through 8, it talks about to everything there is a season. So biological rhythms, there you'll often hear circadian rhythms and biological rhythms. Biological rhythms are the periodic changes which affect your physiological and your psychological functions. And these variations occur in a cycle known as the biological rhythm. They're the natural cycle of change in your body's chemicals or its functions. It's like an internal master clock that coordinates the other clocks in your body. So this main clock is located in your brain. It's right above the nerves where the eyes cross. It's made up of thousands of nerve cells that help sync your body's functions and activities. And so we have four biological rhythms. We have the circadian rhythm. That's the 24-hour cycle that includes your physiological and your behavioral rhythms like sleeping. We have the diurnal rhythms, and it's synced with day and night, but it's really what happens. Diurnal means daytime, what happens during the daylight. And so that's when that rhythm is active. The ultradian rhythm have a shorter period, but a higher frequency than the circadian rhythms. It's like your heartbeat. Your heartbeat is an ultradian rhythm. You have Saccharomyces boulardii has a respiration. That's an ultradian rhythm. Then the infradian rhythms are ones that last longer than 24 hours, such as your menstrual cycle. The word circadian comes from the Latin phrase circa diem, which means about a day. And actually, we're really not a 24-hour day. It's really 24 hours and 11 minutes. So welcome to your circadian rhythm. And our bodies are like musical compositions. We have different instruments within us, so our whole body is the symphony. And so you have wind instruments and you have string instruments and percussion and things like that. Well, your heart is the percussion because it's keeping pace for the rest of your bodies. Your digestive system is the bass. It's providing the foundation for everything in your body, your systems and everything need. Your brain is what I call the piano. It gives us life and coordination, but guess who is the conductor? You know, who gives us that perfect synchronization of all the instruments? And so this mastermind is the circadian clock. So that's your series of molecular cues to that integrates the external stimuli to keep the body's cycles on a 24-hour schedule. So here's a simple way to think about the circadian rhythm. Your body has thousands of processes going on at any given moment. So many of these processes function better in concert with other processes, just like in a symphony. So we may focus on our digestion, but your digestion is influenced by your thyroid hormones or your blood sugar or any of these other hormones. So it's never just one instrument. So we're gonna get a little geeky. And it's not because I expect you to know or understand all of this, but it's really for you to understand how it's not just the circadian rhythm. So all these processes that we've been talking about have a certain rhythm. The body has all these different processes going on, and they have a certain rhythm and flow. Scientists think the body conducts this orchestra with clock genes, and these get activated in many cells in the body in a synchronized way. But in particular, clock genes seem to control your NAD plus and your SIRT1. These are coenzymes, they're protein. The SIRT1 is dependent on the SIRT, the NAD, and you'll see the importance of protein in all of this. According to some theories, low levels of these proteins have been linked with mitochondria that don't work well, which may cause people to feel tired and have slower metabolisms. Many variations in genes of the circadian rhythm are being researched as potential factors that may raise the risk of diabetes. It is November, it is Diabetes Awareness Month. I do want to take a moment. The reason, besides my own personal story with exhaustion and not getting up and doing too much, is looking back at my family's history in correlation with mine. I've been doing a lot of gut work. And that's also what prompted me to do this, because I'm seeing how this all takes a part and plays a factor in this. So what controls the circadian rhythm? So your symphony pit is a compartment of the brain called the suprachiasmatic nucleus, or CSN. I'm not going to say the whole word, each whole phrase each time. You'll just hear me say CSN. And that's in an area of your brain called the hypothalamus. This group of cells is called the master clock and sets the tone of your circadian rhythms. The hypothalamus links your nervous system to your endocrine system. It plays an essential role in modulating your body's temperature, your thirst, your appetite, weight, your sex drive, your blood pressure, your emotions, and of course, your sleep cycles. So the CSN contains only 50,000 of the 86 billion neurons of your body. Our eyes detect light, signaling directly to the CSN as if the conductor were being cued by the mood of the audience. During the day, high intensity light signals the CSN to produce the proteins period. I'll go back up here. See where it says PR1-3? That stands for protein period. The CRY is for cryptochrome. Cryptochrome is a flavoprotein, which is sensitive to blue light. So during the day, again, you have this high sensitivity light that signals the CSN to produce the protein period and the cryptochrome, which in turn activate myriad downstream pathways. I'll go back up here because that might make more sense. They control metabolism, sleep, and your overall activity level. So meanwhile, your PER and CRY, your protein period and cryptochrome, accumulate in the cytoplasm of your cells. And this reaches a critical level at which they translocate. So they move to the nucleus and they bind to receptors that shut down the production of these protein periods in cryptochrome. And so what this happens then is this slows your metabolic activity and prepares the body for sleep, which is what we want, unless it happens at a different time of the day. I have a sluggish metabolism, which is why, again, I started studying some of this. So our internal rhythms are thought to be generated by protein synthesis within the CSN. Protein is produced for a period of hours until it reaches a level that it inhibits further production. So over the next few hours, you have some protein, the protein levels gradually fall, and when it drops to a certain threshold level, then you have production of your protein starting again. And so what you have then, it just keeps generating this internal biological rhythm when that happens. It takes about 24 and a half to 25 hours. And you'll often hear Dr. Rita Marie talking about the importance of having protein in your first, the first foods you eat. And this is part of it. We'll go into that in a little bit more here. So at the protein level, a healthy cell will progress through a daily cycle of alternating metabolic states, and it's directed by your circadian system, with proteins going through cycles of being synthesized and degraded. So science suggests that during periods of fasting, again, you'll hear Dr. Rita Marie talk about fasting. She does the fasting with food. So during these periods, cells release nutrients for recycling. And they then, when that happens, you remove damaged or unnecessary organelles, which is another cellular structure. And so this is known as autophagy. You very frequently hear Dr. Rita Marie talk about the importance of autophagy. So in the liver and other tissues, this is a progression. It has a certain timing to it that's controlled by your body's circadian clock. So once again, it's not just random things happening. There's a certain cadence to it, just like in a symphony, a well-orchestrated symphony. So part of circadian modulation of autophagy includes establishing particular phases of day or night when the neurons are more susceptible to aggregation. This is a clumping and mitochondrial dysfunction. And so these things are exacerbated by circadian rhythm. Sorry, we're having some weather here and I just noticed my light kind of flashed a little bit. Anyway, so this would reduce the daily peak capacity for autophagy. So autophagy works via the circadian expression of the transcription factor C/EBP-beta. And this is protein. It's a macrophage activation protein. So I know we're getting a little geeky, but, and I know there's comments or questions, and I'll get to those afterwards. So the circadian cues have this really cool name called Zeitgebers. A Zeitgeber is like the time giver. It just sounds so mystical. And so this is your biological cue for the time of day. Researchers believe that our body needs these clues to know when to synchronize different activities. Lynn Rose often says that the worst thing that ever happened to mankind was the development of the light bulb, because it kind of has screwed up our circadian cues, our Zeitgebers. So the most significant Zeitgeber is the light-dark cycle. The environmental information, it goes through the retina, and the retinal hypothalamic tract to the suprachiasmatic nucleus in the hypothalamus. So you can see that again up here, right? You can see where the hypothalamus is, and the optic chiasm. Let's see here. There we go. Oh, next one. Here we go. And so other Zeitgebers include temperature, the tides, social contact. And so you can see how what's happening now in our society around the world is affecting people's sleep-wake cycles, their circadian rhythms, food availability. And when I say food availability, I also mean good food. I happen to live in what some people call a food wasteland or a food desert, because good food is harder to come by. And so that I have found also affects my circadian rhythm. Scientists point out that there is the central clock in the hypothalamus, which has light as the predominant Zeitgeber, and there are what are called peripheral clocks in cells outside the brain, like your liver. So feeding and starving cycles are considered to be dominant Zeitgebers for many peripheral clocks. Dr. Rita-Marie mentioned the, my brain just stopped for a second there. I must need some light or less light. The vagus nerve. And so the vagus nerve is also affected by when you fast. So there again, we have a symphony going on. Food metabolites such as glucose and or feeding related hormones such as glucagon and insulin have been proposed as likely candidates for phase setting of peripheral clocks. So we have so many ways to generate circadian rhythms in our body, in the tissues of our cells. So it's just very likely that you have different and a variety of pathways that are used to help synchronize your peripheral clock. I love listening to orchestras, symphonies, and things like that. And you can sometimes see where the conductor will maybe pay a little bit of attention to one side. Maybe somebody got a little off, and he does things to get them back on track. And so that's what we're always trying to do here. So to make this a little more practical, here's, and you will have access to these slides to look at this. Here is a clock, a circadian rhythm clock, to help you see how you can coordinate tasks in your life, in your body. Because over the decades, because they've been studying the circadian rhythm for decades, I feel like it's really starting to come into play now. They've found the importance of disrupted circadian biology, especially in things like obesity. And they're still doing a lot of active research on this one. So scientists believe the circadian biology also has a massive influence on energy balance and your metabolism. And so, of course, that will also affect obesity. Some studies suggest that many hormone receptors have been observed to exhibit circadian rhythms of expression. So what you do with yourself, your emotions. The daily timing of food intake has itself been shown to affect body weight. And so it's not just what you eat or even how you eat, it is when you eat. Because as I'm sure you've seen and you've heard Dr. Rita-Marie say many times, how this can affect your body weight regulation. And they've done studies on that in mammals. And there's part of it too, it has to do with the regulation of genes that control metabolism. So they've done it in different mammals, they've not studied it in humans. One of the things, and it doesn't show up on this particular slide, but one of the things I thought was interesting is that our bowel movements actually are affected by the circadian rhythm. So optimal bowel movement time is thought to be about 8:30 in the morning, and it starts suppressing it at 10:30 in the evening. So it seems that a person's circadian rhythm, if it's off, it will definitely affect your sleep and the quality of your sleep. It affects your bowel movements, your digestion, your blood sugar, all different parts of your life and body. And honestly, going back again to what Lynn Rose said about the light bulb, we have seen way before the light bulb how our circadian rhythm has been a factor in all of history of mankind, our whole existence. Because before that, we'd really been in rhythm with the natural sunlight. But now here we are in this modern world, and we're becoming a little more offbeat. We may stay up too late. We may sleep too late. And what we need to see here is that as the position of the sun changes, it tunes our circadian rhythm to better perform for specific tasks. And I use this a lot with my kids when I was homeschooling them, because at 10 in the morning, their brain had their its highest alertness. So all of our head work, so to speak, would be done in the morning because that's when it was at its peak. Their outside time, their rest time, all that physical stuff, that happened after their midday meal. And let's see. Yeah, there's lots of studies that show the significant relationship between light intensity and alertness. And again, because you can see how the sun is moving, it comes up in the morning, it hits about 10 in the morning, and even with daylight savings time and everything, it's still really high there at that earlier part of the day, and then it starts to shift and go down. If you use something like Flux on your computer, you'll see that it starts changing colors. And so it's starting to affect how our body responds when we use that natural sunlight. And so I guess you could say that the circadian rhythm directly affects the song and dance of your hormone levels. You have melatonin secretions and the concentration in them and how it affects your bodily functions. So as we spend more time indoors, we are offsetting our circadian rhythm. And that's what we're seeing a lot of these days as we're in a so-called lockdown. So waking up with the full morning sunlight, when you have that effect in your bedroom, it awakens your body and your mind. I know a lot of people have blocking curtains and things like that. That will help you sleep. I actually have no curtains on my windows. And so I'm in my bed faces the window. So as soon as that sun comes up, because it faces to the east, as that sun comes up, it's just hitting me right away. And that definitely does awaken me. And then in the evening, lighting that adjusts to sunset. So like I said, I use a Flux on my machine and I can tell it helps give me a drowsy effect. And so it helps my body to wind down and prepare for sleep, because what does it do? It stimulates melatonin production. And the other interesting thing is that it really matches up with the Chinese body clock. So if you look at the times and the body systems that are affected, it all seems to match the circadian rhythm. So once again, we have ancient wisdom here. So that's all good and geeky and everything like that. So what do we do? Here are some things that you can do to block out, to help your body with the circadian rhythm. And so the first thing is really, if you can get yourself off the computer at a decent time, like 8 or 9 o'clock at night, that would be great. But barring that, you want to block out that light at night. And it's the blue light in specific. And so getting rid of that blue light at night is critical to a healthy circadian rhythm. Green light seems to have some melatonin blocking effects as well. So that's why red glasses are considered to be ideal. Some studies suggest that even red light at night increases alertness, even though it doesn't inhibit melatonin release like blue light. There's some studies that show that melatonin suppression might not be required for light-induced nighttime alertness. On the other hand, that's the one lovely thing about studies. And one thing I learned through Dr. Rita Marie is to go down all the rabbit holes. So on the other hand, remember that blue light blocking glasses aren't marketed as medical devices, which means that their claims aren't regulated by the FDA. So there are no valid clinical trials to support the use of these glasses or any of the other means of blocking out blue light in humans. They all come from animal studies and they haven't been extrapolated to humans. In animals, light at night alters daily patterns of cortisol and clock proteins. It's been suggested that nighttime light also alters circadian clocks in humans. So there's just they're theorizing, but they haven't, they don't have any large scale studies on it. And scientists are investigating whether blue light destroys the DHA in eyes, which hypothetically disrupts the signal to the hypothalamus. So there again, you have that SCN affecting the hypothalamus. Other researchers suggest that a mere 5 lux of light, which is a very, very tiny amount, can disrupt the circadian rhythm in mice. And so the amount of light that may have the same effect in humans is unknown. Bright light devices are around 10,000 lux, and direct bright sunlight is around 100,000 lux. So a low level of light may be present in your room, even if you shut your lights off, but you have a night light, for example, or if you're getting light from outside at night. You know, if you have an outside light by your garage or something, a little bit of that comes in, you're still getting a little bit of that. And so that still can affect you. According to some hypotheses, low levels of light may alter core circadian clock rhythms in the hypothalamus. These changes were associated with time alterations in eating and increased weight gain in mice, but they have not explored this in humans. In one study, people who had delayed phase sleep syndrome, and these are tend to be people who are night owls, experienced lower melatonin levels in response to light at night. So, and one other study suggested that people with light colored eyes, blue eyes or just light colored eyes, may be more susceptible to melatonin suppression by blue light than people with darker eyes. And so again, they need to do more studies to verify that. There's lots of user experiences from people that are anecdotal. I actually really enjoy reading people's experiences because to me that those are studies. And so some people say that when they keep to strictly blocking out all blue and green light at night, they actually find their behavior odd. So some people advise that you have to make a calculation of how it's going to affect your health. And so just be, again, pay attention to your behavior, your emotions. And then somebody else said if their partner isn't on board, it was tough. They were dating someone who wasn't on board with it. And so they were talking about how difficult it was. So again, do your own research on your own body so you can read the studies, learn about it, and then find out how your body responds to it. Let's see. Some people wear red glasses for at least 2 hours before bed. One person said that he turns off all artificial lighting and uses orange light bulbs at night. And I talked about flux. There's something called twilight and blue light filter for your Android phone. You can install flux on an iPhone. And then there's something called red sheets that block blue and green to cover an iPad or other screens. All right, so the next one. All right, I bet you've heard this from Dr. Rita Marie before. Do not eat large meals or do not eat late at night. So night eating habits have been linked with metabolic syndrome, obesity, circadian rhythm disruption, and other health problems. Now, there was a recent review that suggested that eating at night is only detrimental in people who have large meals. Some say that if you have something light, like under 150 calories, the study showed it didn't harm these people. But the people they did the studies on did not have any other factors. They were healthy according to the study parameters. So again, you know, take how your body responds to your eating at night, if you really feel the need to. Also consider your exercise habits. So there again, there are just a couple studies on that, and there really need to be more. But I share that because I want to empower you to figure out what is best for your own body. I know for myself, because I have a sluggish metabolism, I have to avoid eating 3 hours before I go to bed. It's just better for my digestion, my liver, all of that. And so, again, the general ideas to 2 to 3 hours, even 4 hours can be good. And then, you know, increase your daytime calories so that you're not hungry at night. If you find yourself hungry at night, or that need to eat something before you go to bed, that's where you want to see, where is that coming from? That's where the more emotional work comes in to see, are you really hungry? Maybe you're just thirsty. Let's see. And then again, I talked a little bit about the importance of fasting in this to help reset your circadian rhythm. So hunger, you know, do we really know hunger? Really, when you start feeling hungry, this is just another chance to tune into your body and see, how am I feeling? How am I doing? Am I really hungry? What's going on? So that's one of the benefits of that. So the next thing, all right, get outside first thing in the morning. I know we're getting into the really cold season here where I live, and the idea of going outside first thing in the morning doesn't always sound so good, but even if it's just for 5 minutes, I can do that. Scientists claim that light helps entrain our circadian rhythm. So this entrainment normally happens during the natural 24-hour solar day and over the course of the day going into the nighttime. Again, based on animal studies, scientists suggest that bright light exposure during the daytime enhances the nighttime melatonin and activates the immune response. And if you've been in any of Dr. Rita Marie's programs for length of time, you've heard her say the importance of this. Getting outside first thing in the morning for that melatonin. And, you know, just getting outside and being active outdoors is just good for you anyway, if you can do it. So again, it's a good idea to get outside first thing in the morning. This will help you get natural sunlight to support and reset your daily rhythm. It's good for your pineal gland, which is a part of all of this. They do have things called dawn simulators and bright light devices. So when you feel like you're not getting bright light in the morning, they have these things out there. But I'm personally in favor of doing everything you can to just get out there, because the bright light devices are large. You can put them at your workstation if you are doing a lot of computer work, especially first thing in the morning. But again, that's not ideal for your health. They do make these caps that have bright light devices on them. They have EMF caps, things like that. But, you know, those are just gadgets, tools. Just get outside, because you want to get as much sunlight in your day. Again, studies have suggested that melatonin is more easily suppressed in the winter than the summer by light. And this was a study on Japanese people. So scientists say that this might be because not having enough bright light in the day, it predisposes you to circadian disruption with light at night. So we might be inside with artificial light all day long, and then we continue to have that artificial light during the evening when we're supposed to be starting to shut things down. But again, they need to do more large scale studies to really confirm this. There was a study on people who are night owls. They're called later chronotypes. And they were exposed only to natural sunlight, and they had a more significant change in the time they went to sleep. They went to bed earlier, and they became more similar to early birds, which are earlier chronotypes. So again, and I put a link here to a video where the researcher there mentions how the sun is important for setting the circadian rhythm. So again, just get as much sunlight on your body, on your skin as possible. Yes, for those of us here in the northern climes, we're not as wanting to, but do what you can. All right, so going to bed and waking up at the same time. Too many of us, and I'm getting so much better at it, but we may have irregular sleep-wake patterns. And that's, again, been associated with delayed circadian rhythms. And actually, they've done studies that showed a lower academic performance in undergraduate students. So keeping a regular sleep-wake cycle may support healthy sleep and a balanced circadian rhythm. Like I said, I wasn't always so good at this, but I'm working on this. Generally, what I do is I tell myself, well, I'm going to get to bed by 9, and then I'll get to bed 11, which is still a decent time. Stress. The body's circadian rhythm and stress response are tightly tied. So, and there's lots of research showing that psychological stress will throw off a healthy circadian rhythm. Your stress hormones, your corticotropin releasing hormone and cortisol may have the effect of delaying the circadian rhythm. Some scientists suspect that this is why night owls are more of an anxious phenotype, though, again, lots more studies to be done. And I don't think it's just psychological stress. I think anything that activates your HPA, your hypothalamic pituitary adrenal axis, will produce a stress response. And so just, again, pay attention to how your body is feeling, how it's responding. Again, you can have physical stress just by what you eat and how your body responds. All right, sync your exercise routine. So I'm going to take a Dr. Edenberg will like this. I'm going to drink some water. So some research suggests that exercise acts similar to sunlight in that it helps entrain your circadian rhythm. And it's normally practiced during daylight. So exercise likely also promotes the production and release of melatonin, which will also improve your sleep quality. There, some of the information I read suggested that people should not exercise 4 hours before going to bed. But as usual, there were others that say that exercising around 5 p.m. can be ideal for sleep, but that exercising at 9 and going to sleep at 11 isn't good. However, you know, again, more studies need to be done. Personally, I feel you need to find where your body exercises the best and then do it then, and do it on a regular basis at that time. Don't do it in the morning 2 or 3 times and then do it in the evening and then do it. Just find the rhythm that works best for you and just do that in that period of time. So there is some research that suggests it may be best to sync the time of day when you exercise to your circadian rhythm. I just kind of talked about that. One study found that exercising early in the morning enhanced sleep quality, which in turn led to greater reductions in blood pressure during the night. Other studies found the opposite, suggesting that exercising in the evening is a better way to lower nighttime blood pressure. And so basically moderate exercise is good for your sleep, your heart, and basically your overall health. If you're not sure how or when to exercise, we have plenty of NEPT students and graduates that like Maria and others that could help you with that. All right. Eat a healthy diet. You want good whole foods. You want your vegetables. You want fiber. Because diets high in fat or sugar have been shown to alter circadian clock functions. Now, again, when I say fat, I don't, there is good fat. So this is a basic general guideline. You have to decide what's best for your body and your microbiome. So these are the basic nutrients that so far in the studies, they have found to be, to help you have a good circadian rhythm: selenium, vitamin A. In fact, deficiency of vitamin A has been linked with what they call circadian dysrhythmia, which in turn results in cognitive dysfunction, your methyl groups, and SAMe. So the effect of these supplements on the circadian rhythm in humans hasn't been fully studied, but this is what I have learned so far. Let's see here. And be warm, but not too warm at night. So body temperature normally drops at night. Limited research suggests that heat exposure increases your wakefulness and decreases slow wave sleep and your rapid eye movement. But, both having a really excessively high or a very low temperature will disturb your sleep. So some people like to have a thick blanket on to snuggle at night, regardless of the season. So depending on the temperature in your room, it may make you too warm, and that could potentially disturb your circadian rhythm. But you want to just make sure you're warm enough at night. Just don't overdo it. I'm one of those people who I have to have socks on at night. And even in a very hot evening, I have a light blanket on over my feet. It works for me. So here are my own anecdotal tips, all right? You want to go to bed early. Ideally, it's at 10 and then wake up about 6. You want to try not to go to bed at midnight. And like I said, I'm working on this. And I've had some success. I seem, like I said, to go to bed earlier. But the key is consistency every day, not just most days. So like I said, I tell myself I'm going to bed by 9 and I'm generally in bed and asleep by 11. Get rid of, and a lot of these things you've heard again from Dr. Rita Marie, get rid of chronic inflammation, oxidative stress, mitochondrial dysfunction, or hypoxia. So if you have chronic oxidative stress, inflammation, hypoxia, or mitochondrial issues, then you want to work with Dr. Rita Marie, her programs, any of her coaches, to find out what the underlying cause might be and work on that. Each one of these may disturb your circadian rhythm, and they're also increased by disturbed circadian rhythm. So you kind of have this vortex of things going on. These can start it, and then it just creates it. It's just a bad cycle. So for me, sulfur foods were very significant in giving me inflammation and disrupting my circadian rhythm, but that wasn't the only trigger. Again, it's a symphony. So your mitochondria are supposed to be more active in the day, and you're supposed to utilize oxygen, which results in superoxide. So bursts of superoxide will help you create new mitochondria. When your mitochondria are working well, you will build up healthy levels of ATP and NAD levels, which are important for energy utilization and metabolism. Healthy levels of these will allow you to be alert and energized in the day and tired by nightfall. And you're going, wow, that's great. How does that happen? So the mitochondria create ATP. ATP converts to cyclic AMP, which is a critical messenger molecule for so many molecular and cellular processes. CAMP is needed for the regulation of glycogen, sugar, and lipid metabolism. The phosphates from ATP activate proteins. There's proteins again. And that act directly on your cell's ion channels. Through PKA, which is protein kinase A, and Krebs, CREB, it leads to the production of your gene products. So again, good protein and being able to digest your protein are really important. The following hormones also require adequate CAMP levels to function optimally. FSH, LH, ADH, which is also affects your kidneys. It's a part of your kidneys. TSH, CRH, HCG, ACTH, MSH, PTH, GHRH, glucagon, and calcitonin. And again, if you've been in any of Dr. Rita Marie's programs, especially ERC, you will have heard these. You have access to the materials that really go into this. Cyclic AMP turns on PKA, protein kinase A, which converts ATP into AMP. And AMP is adenosine monophosphate. And then that goes from AMP into adenosine. And then adenosine builds up throughout the day and causes you to feel tired as the day goes on. And you have a hormone in you called orexin, and that also has a sharp drop off. And then that's when you feel like you just need to go to sleep. So if your mitochondria aren't working, you don't produce optimal levels of ATP, cyclic AMP, AMP, and adenosine. You need adequate oxygen for your mitochondria to work well. Chronic inflammation and or oxidative stress will cause your mitochondria to slow, and you won't utilize oxygen well. Low oxygen will lengthen your electron transport chain and cause increased superoxide per ATP produced that you're producing. Again, I know that's really probably geeky, but I have a strong feeling because you guys are here and listen to Dr. Riedemer, you might actually be following me. I was kind of rehearsing with some people and they're like, I have no idea what you just said. You also will have access to this replay, the recording, so you can go back and listen again. So you want to increase your cyclic AMP right after you wake up. That resets your circadian rhythm. If you take Frescolin, which is claimed to help with weight loss, you want to take it right when you wake up. Exercise also increases cyclic AMP. So it's not a bad idea to wake up and to do some push-ups or take a quick sprint. You want to take most of your supplements in the morning. I think that almost all herbal or other supplements should be taken in the morning or maybe the earlier part of the afternoon. There are some exceptions like magnesium, glycine, herbs which are meant to put you to sleep like valerian or passion flower. There may be a few others. So unless you have a clear reason to use it at night, use it in the morning or in the earlier part of the afternoon. So, you know, I still suggest to some people supplements to make them drowsy before bed, but I'm trying to be more careful about that and only suggest it when I have people that suffer from insomnia. So there you go. Now I get to see all of the things that are being said here. Chat. All right. Oh, thank you, Paula. Yes, I gave Francis my slide, so they should be in your dashboard there.
Yeah, they should
still be. And Jack, can I say that? Yeah.
Yeah, they'll be added with the recording.
Yeah. Yeah, 5 p.m. is where the greatest cardiovascular efficiency and muscle strength is. you want the, so there's a difference between doing your exercise in the morning, because that's going to help with your melatonin and everything, and doing something in the afternoon, like it said about 5, for your cardiovascular efficiency. And so even doing something simple like rebounding can help with your cardiovascular system. It doesn't have to be a full-on workout. I don't have much light with daylight savings time changing. I don't have much light at 5 in the evening right now. That black eye mask can be helpful to you. The cover to the iPhone is called a red sheet. Let's see here. With respect to slides regarding coordinating tasks and circadian rhythm in Chinese body clock, how do changes in number/timing of daylight hours, in other words, daylight of 8 hours as compared to that's a great question. And it does affect it. How it affects it is when you get out first thing in the morning and you get that melatonin, you're going to find how it affects you on the back end when you go to sleep. You may find yourself still getting sleepier at an earlier time. It's also going to affect your digestion. So again, that's why we tend to eat lighter the more sunlight we have. So that's just a couple of ideas. Yes, Heather, with your home, when you have big windows, lots of natural sunlight, that will, it can help getting, there's still a refraction that happens with the glass, the windows. So if you can get outside, that's the best way. But if you're like me where, you know, I'm not looking forward to once again, those below zero temperatures, I will train my circadian rhythm from inside my warm, cozy house. Sandra, I do not right now have any. I am not a device person. I don't. I read about them, but I prefer to not use devices. I feel like having my laptop and my phone are enough of the devices that I want to use right now. So I'm trying to do things without them. My husband and I, though, have talked about getting kind of one of those Dawn simulators, because it is so hard. And we have noticed now that, you know, over the last couple of years, the more smarter we get, that's not a good English grammar thing, but the smarter we get on understanding this and how our moods are, the more we realize, oh, you mean that grumpiness that could have been affected by sunlight? Okay. And you know, if it matters, it does affect the sex drive.
And those lights, I'll just say something about those lights. I bought one of those for my son, who's very sensitive to the daylight shifts. And, you know, we don't have a huge winter and it doesn't get miserable, but there's patches, and he would find that he just felt really sad and irritable and cranky. And so he got one of those lights. And there's a lot of really good, you know, brands. They're not like high EMF or anything like that. So I wouldn't be afraid of them. And he would just sit it on his desk while he was studying, and it made a huge difference.
And that's why we've been looking at doing it, because we do notice that we can get a little bit grumpy in the, maybe a lot in the winter.
I would get a lot grumpy if I lived by you.
Yeah. And so, you know, I'm not adverse to it. I like to see what I can do on my own and then supplement with it. Right. You know, the same way I am with food and herbs. Exactly. And nutrients.
Exactly.
You know, your body produces enough things on its own, and we're just here to support it. We don't want to, you know, the word supplement means just that. We're supplementing it, not taking the place of.
Right. And with, you know, sunlight in the winter, if you live in a northern climate that tends to be inclement and snow a lot, you're not going to be having the opportunity, like same way in the winter up there. If you're looking to just buy locally grown food, good luck. You're eating snow. You know, there isn't any. You can make sprouts in your house, and you can make sauerkraut from cabbage that you bought at the supermarket that was transported thousands of miles, but we don't have choices. And probably in the olden days before electricity and modern conveniences, there was a predominance of people living closer to the equator versus, you know, expanding into those northern climates. So I agree with Lynn that you do as much as you can, but like for me, every time I can, I plan to go out in the wintertime. My exercise time is between like 3 and 4 or 2 and 4, because that's when the temperatures are at the highest and that's when it's the warmest time. And it's the sun doesn't go down for another 2 hours. We're lucky because we're a little bit more south. So that's my time. And it's like, I got to get out there because I need my exposure to sunlight. And I remember just a few years ago, just to show you how much this affects mood and cravings and things like that, I was talking to a friend, like, I don't understand it. The last 10 days, I've been just like craving chocolate all the time. Why is that? She goes, it's been raining for the last 10 days. When was the last time you got to go out for a run in the sunlight? I'm like,
in the sunlight,
She said, you're trying to fill a need, like a pleasure that you were getting before. And also, you know, the rhythm, the sunlight, and you're not getting it. So naturally you're looking for something else, and chocolate's a damn good supplement.
It sure tastes good.
Oh, she was so right. Right.
Right. And this also speaks to the need for protein and good quality protein, and making sure your body is breaking down and utilizing that protein. My body, the fermentation process of it is, I don't do well right now with protein. So I have to be careful with how I take it and then doing the things I need to do so that I produce the right microbes to digest the protein. Because protein, as we see here, is so critical all the way down to the clock genes. Mm-hmm. And that again goes to, you know, your recommendation for the chronometer. So you can put in and see how much protein am I taking? And, you know.
But then there's the next question, how much are you absorbing? So if somebody you know, does a chronometer and they go, oh yeah, you're taking in the right amount of protein, then therefore we need to look at absorption. But if somebody's taking in 10 grams of protein a day, we're like, we need to tweak your diet a little bit here before we worry about, you know, it's an absorption issue. So there's so much, and you, those of you who are in ERC or have access to, like, you know, predominance of so much information in Empowered Self-Care Lab. That's why we created it, right? Because we wanted you to be able to be educated about these things and not just be following the party line that you hear, you know, on TV and on the radio and all.
You know, and Lynn says, well, how much protein do we need each day? And it depends. It depends your age, how active you are, how your body is breaking it down. So I don't take in as much protein as, say, my active husband. But partly that's because I'm not breaking down what I do take in. So I'm working more on making sure that the breakdown is happening and that I'm taking in good quality protein. With my
food. And it depends, you know, the quality of the protein as well, but I think we have to look at, you look at your size, you look at how much exercise are you doing? That makes a huge difference, right? If you're lifting weights, you're going to need more. So I would say for the average woman, you know, somewhere between 5'2" and 5'6", 5'8", something like that, probably in the range, it could be as low as 35 to 40 grams a day. Mm-hmm. And it could be as high as 75 to 80 grams a day. Right? It just depends on your activity and your ability to process it. The folks that say that you need 150 grams of protein a day, I can't get on that bandwagon, because the extra protein is hurtful, especially to your kidneys. Right? So you don't want to take that chance. And it's nitrogenous waste, it's acidic waste. And so you build up the acidic byproducts, and cancer loves acidic byproducts, right? Yeah. All the diseases thrive in an acidic environment. So it's really important that we don't get too much. It's Goldilocks, right? Not too little, not too much. Right. We need to find the quantity that's just right for us. And you can tell by how well your body's functioning.
Exactly.
And in ERC and Empowered Self-Care Lab, we do have a questionnaire in the, it says this, evaluate your nutrients. So it's like the section that says about nutrients, and there's one on protein. Do you, you know, you get a sense of, do I have a protein problem? If you are exercising, you're lifting weights, your push-ups, whatever, and you seem like you're still like really flabby, you're not able to build muscle. That's one clue, right? If you seem to catch every cold that goes around, because proteins are important in your immunoglobulins, or immunoglobulins, which are the disease fighting, they're proteins, right? So all this stuff right now where we really want our immune system functioning right, we need to make sure it's the right amount. So if you're catching colds, but if you're like healthy all the time and everybody in your family is getting sick, but you're not, and you have no problem building muscle when you do push-ups, you're probably getting enough protein.
Right. And so again, it's that whole symphony aspect, right? Listen to the symphony in your own body. And what is it telling you, right? Mm-hmm. And it affects your emotions as well.
Yeah.
So it's never just
right. If you're depressed, if you're on any kind of antidepressant or anxiety medication, those amino acids that get derived from the protein, they're critical for neurotransmitters. Yep. So that's another clue. Moods. Exactly. Thank you for that.
Yeah. And so it's never just one thing. It's the whole piece.
Yeah.
And so all of this is just information through the studies we currently have, knowing that there will be more studies that come. So we take that information in, and how does that apply to me? What does that mean to Lynn and her story of her life and what she wants to present mm-hmm. to the world? And so that's what, this is to empower you to take this information. It's not that this is the right way to live. Oh my, you know, this is when they say we should get up, and this is when we should go to bed, and this is when it's a flow, it's a rhythm. It's not a routine where you have to do it this way and everything. It's a flow and rhythm for your body, your life, and you get to choose that.
Yeah, that's so important to understand, because somebody tells me you got to get up at the crack of dawn and exercise every day. I've tried. I do it in Hawaii. I'm able to do it there because it's like, I don't want to miss a minute of daylight. Yeah. I get up at dawn and I go out on the beach, and it's warm and I can still jump in the water when I'm finished. But I don't want to jump up in Austin, even, you know, the other day. It's been beautiful during the day in the 80s, but in the morning and we wake up and it's cold for us, 55 to 60 degrees. I don't want to go out when it's 55 to 60 degrees, when I can wait until 4 in the afternoon and go out when it's 75 to 80 degrees. That's the way my body works, and I'm not going to apologize for it.
No.
I'm just accept it. But other for you, you may love going out and exercising outdoors when it's 60 degrees out. Like, that's what drives you. And like, you'd hate it when I go out when it's 85, 90, 100 degrees, but I love it, right? We have to just go into, what is our body thrive on? What do we do best with? And then live that.
And you remember, you get to choose.
Yeah.
There's nobody here. I'm not telling you, I'm an expert on Lynn, and I'm just sharing what I've learned. Dr. Rita Marie is an expert with Dr. Rita Marie, and she shares her vast wealth of knowledge. But you get to choose. It's very important that with all of this, you remember, you get to choose.
Yes, absolutely. And that's why I just want to jump in and say, you know, many of you are in ERC, many of you have been in ERC, many of you are in Empowered Self-Care, and we created Empowered Self-Care. This content has been there forever. It's just been locked away for only ERC people. And we've just reorganized it and set it up so that you get to be empowered. Our current healthcare system is a disempowered system that invites you to go to the doctor and get a pill for every ill. And that's not the future of true healthcare. That's not what we want. We want you to be empowered, to know enough, to be excited by this talk Lynn did. She got geeky, didn't she? She got really geeky into some of those pathways. And when you understand it, you may not remember half the stuff she said. In fact, you probably will forget 90% of it. But the key pieces are the takeaways of why this stuff is so important. And you knew that it made sense. You don't have to remember why it made sense unless you're going for your, you know, PhD in biochemistry. Right. But you understood it. And so you go, oh, this is why I'm doing this.
Yeah. I can't really explain it to the world at this point, but this is why I'm doing it. And you're empowered. And within our structure, we're giving you the tools, like a presentation like this. She's giving you some tools that you can use within the whole system. We're giving you tools. That's what empowerment is. For somebody to say to you, Lynn, I want you to eat a healthy diet. We have three Lynns on this call right now, by the way. Lynn, I want you to eat a healthy diet. You go, great. I want to eat a healthy diet. And that's all I say to you. And I walk away. I just told you, you needed to eat a healthy diet. I didn't empower you to eat a healthy diet. I didn't teach you what good foods might be, what work for you, what won't. I don't believe there's any one perfect diet for anybody, but I do believe there's an imperfect one. I do believe there's one that hurts everyone.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, that's the one that most people in our Western world follow. Mm-hmm. That's why we want to get away from that. I can tell you, don't eat hydrogenated fats. And if occasionally you're eating a pristine diet and you go to a restaurant and they put a little hydrogenated oil on your salad for some strange, weird reason, it's not going to kill you, right? But that's bad food for you, right? This processed crap, we don't want to be eating, but then finding what actually works for you. What's the balance of greens versus, you know, rainbow vegetables? What's the balance of fruit versus vegetables? What's the balance of fat versus carb versus what works for you?
And you know, to just say, well, eat lots of leafy green vegetables. I can't eat cabbage right now because of the sulfur. Mm-hmm. So I'm concentrating on dandelion greens, watercress, chard, things like that, that are working better for me right now. Asparagus has been working really well for me, but it's through this process. And I believe, I don't know if you've started it yet, but I know the elimination diet is part of what you're doing with the Empowered Self-Care Lab. And that's where you get to find out what works for you. And that's what's so beautiful about it.
Yeah. Yeah. So thank you, Lynn, for an amazing presentation. Yeah. I was very impressed with it. We will get the slides put up with the video. I know Lynn said it would be helpful to have them in advance. And yeah, we know that. And yeah, we are extremely busy people and we fit it in and we may not have the slides well in advance. We may not finish the slides until the night before. And then it's a matter of getting it to the team to be able to create a web page to put it on, et cetera. So we'll do our best, but it's not something I could promise.
And you know, you do get this replay so you can go back and print out the slides and listen again.
Yeah.
And I want to say that the reason I got a little geeky is because I know the caliber of people you guys are. You're here because you hear the geekiness in Dr. Rita Marie, and you guys just impressed the heck out of me. So I felt I needed to give you this type of and quality of information because that's what you have been empowered to.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. Yeah. And we'll get the slides and we'll see if we can, if the speaker gets the slides to us in advance, if I can get the team to change their processing, to put the page up in advance with, you know, a blank space for the recording and the slides, we'll see what we can do about that. But I know for a fact that when I teach these, I carve my time out and I have a hugely busy schedule. So usually I put these together like on a good day, the day before. and on other times it's right before. So thank you. Thank you guys so much for being here and for being dedicated to changing your own health, which is inspiring others to change their health and to changing the health of the planet, because the planet needs help. The people need help. And we're all part of that. We're all part of that movement. And it starts with you. It starts with you. So thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. All right. Yeah. Bye, everybody. Let me see. Everybody's loved it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes. Thank you. Okay. Okay. End meeting. Bye, everybody. And you can open up your lines and say goodbye if you want. Just I like the heart. How did you do that?
I was just going to, reactions.
Oh, there's a heart that you can just put. Oh, sweet. I didn't know that. Thank you. I appreciate that, Jenny. All right. Bye-bye, everybody.
Bye. Thanks.